My strikes are fast, like lightning. It is a little bit frightening.
Old Blackheart's got a gift for you. This is Core.
I think there's a reason for us anyway, and I can't speak for everybody, but I think there's a reason why Heroes of the Storm feels quote-unquote special or unique in the grouping of popular MOBA games. And my conclusion is that all of these other MOBA games were at some point based on the characters from the Warcraft universe. And they were characters everybody was familiar with. They were really into that story, so you knew who Thrall was, you knew who... You know, these various characters were Illidan. He made sense to you because you knew who he was. And along comes a mod. It continues to use these same characters. The mod is a big deal. Then people decided to kind of split out and do their own games, all under the ignorance, I guess, of Blizzard. They're too busy making an MMO successful, so they're not really paying attention to this weird new submarket. And they go out there and they make their games. But when you go play those games, if you play Dota 2, and this is not a knock to people who love those games, but when you play that or League of Legends, what you're playing, especially in Dota, are a bunch of characters who just sort of kind of look like stuff from Warcraft, Starcraft, and the like. And same goes for League of Legends. They're heroic, and they got big axes, hammers, and blades and stuff, and that guy kind of looks like Illidan, and that dude looks like a Lich King, sort of, and that thing looks like a Wisp from Warcraft 3, but in the end, they're not, because you can't use them, and you don't have any investment in them as characters or backstories or any of that. In Heroes of the Storm, we're given the strong core game, we're given all of the stuff we need from a MOBA slash brawler, but we're also given characters that we give two shits about. And I think that's great. I'm Scott Johnson, John Jagger's here, Bo Schwartz is here, this is Core. Bo, do you agree?
I agree wholeheartedly. The characters in Heroes of the Storm are way more memorable, and I have way more emotional attachment to these heroes than I have for the champions I've played, say, in League of Legends. And I'd say League does a decent job of their character design. I'm a big Vi and Kalista fan. They're very unique, but they have no story. Vi is a bank robber, and now she fights people in the fields of justice. That's about all I know.
Like they do, ex-robbers known for their fields of justice work after they're done.
You know, we've got three heroes in Heroes of the Storm that are in a love triangle. You got Tyrande, Malfurion, and Illidan. Mm-hmm. I mean, what kind of, like, you know, love heat is there in any other MOBA like that? There isn't. That's
love heat. John, you want to speak to the love heat in Heroes and why it makes it unique among MOBAs?
Oh, there's so much love heat. It's all love heat all the time.
Yeah, that's true.
I think you're onto something though with the characters, but I think there's even something deeper that runs into the gameplay. And I'm not meaning to fire shots at people who like Dota 2 or League of Legends, but when you play those games, you are playing what feels like a game based on a mod. And with Heroes of the Storm, it feels more like a game based in a genre. Like, it feels like a complete game. It is missing a lot of the weird quirkiness that kind of ties it back to, oh, right, this thing used to be a mod.
Right. There's old archaic ideas like Last Hit or, you know, individual leveling or the item shop or some of the conventions. And again, I'm not saying those are bad. You know, we're disclaiming the hell out of this morning, but I don't want to say any of this stuff's bad because it certainly appeals to a player or a very sizable player base. But I agree with you that there is a there's a refinement that happened here, for good or for ill, depending on your perspective, that made it feel like a game in it. I agree with that. That's a really good way to put it, a game in a genre.
Yeah, not only that, but some of these characters have ongoing storylines that we're still following. Mm-hmm. Is Tychus really dead? Mm-hmm. Is what's going on with Artanis in the new StarCraft story? You know, I think there are a lot of reasons we see these characters outside of the Heroes domain that also allow us to enjoy playing them in Heroes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
you see things like I was reminded of this the other day because I play a lot of Jaina right now. And you see Jaina pop, and first thing she says is, "I'm here to help." Right?
It's great. Yeah.
She's super stoked to be like helpful, neighborly. Let's get everything going. I am a beacon of light in this dark Nexus world, right? But we know things about her future. And because we know those things, and we know what happens in Theramore or to Theramore, what happens to her life, what happens to her alliances, who she doesn't trust anymore, whose lifelong friendships are destroyed, let alone what Arthas did to her. End of the world, really. That adds something to it for me. Like, all that backstory is not being presented. It's not being shown. She's just saying, "I'm here to help." But all I can think of is, yeah, but you got, there are demons, man. You got stuff to deal with. You need to lay down on the Nazebo's couch and get some help.
You've actually highlighted for me something I haven't thought of yet, which is Arthas is in the game, correct?
Yeah.
And Jaina is in the game. And they're snatched out of their various worlds to come to the Nexus throughout time.
Yeah.
So does the Jaina that gets snatched into the Nexus, is she younger than Arthas? Like, at what point in the timeline was Jaina pulled and Arthas? Because perhaps Jaina doesn't recognize who this new Arthas is, and some of their banter, some of their voiceover is kind of chronologically incorrect.
So the only one I've ever heard them say together in the Nexus was, he goes, he's a real douche about it. He goes, "Jaina," like that, right? Like a big old creeper dude on a subway, just being a big jerk.
Yeah, not a good pickup line to say the woman's name, very creepy.
Really loud and drawn out.
Yeah, I agree, with a low voice and ice everywhere. And she says, "I'm still not talking to you," she says, or something like that. I don't remember the exact words. I may be able to find it.
That'll show him.
So she's pissed at him, but you're right. We don't know from what? Is it from just the last time they had their big fight and they went their separate ways? Was it since then? I mean, he's all in his ice armor and stuff.
Arthas looks like a mess. Like, "I'm not talking to you" seems really low on the probability of, if you turn into a zombie, Scott, if you were the Lich King.
Yeah.
And we had a little falling out. I wouldn't be like, "I'm still not talking to you." I'll be like, "What the hell happened to you? You look terrible.
Yeah.
You are disgusting. What?" You'd be like, "Oh, it's this Lich King thing." And I'd be like, "All right, now I'm not talking to you."
Well, I found a video that says it's Jaina's interactions with other heroes. Let's see if we can find it, because this might be right here. People in their long intros. Okay, here we go.
"Jaina, I...
I will never forgive you for what you have done, Arthas."
Oh, there you go, dude. Forgive you. Now, which was it? Was it that time you slipped a Mickey in a drink? Or was it the time you took over the world and made a bunch of undead soldiers? Which one was it?
Probably the undead soldier.
All right.
I feel like at that stage, Arthas is not looking for forgiveness anyways. He's not like, I don't think he said like, "Jaina, let's be friends."
Yeah. Oh, come on.
I'm not so bad. This sword is heavy. Help me.
But yeah, there is a sense of tragedy to some of the relationships. You know, I really didn't like Tychus because I just, you know, he's a dirty character. He's a dirty guy. No sympathy for that guy.
Yeah.
And he turns his back on Rainer. Spoilers. I think I did the spoiler alert in the wrong order, but
that's fine. I think you did too. You're like my mom when she tells jokes. She tells the punchline before she tells the joke. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, but he's in there and Rainer and him are, they're kind of exchanging words. I don't know. I didn't play Tychus for a long time. He's the only hero I wouldn't play because I actually had an emotional reaction to Tychus, which was like, "I don't like this guy. Why would I play some hillbilly dumbo? Like, you know, like, he's an idiot. He's a criminal. He's dumb. Nope, don't play him." But then I eventually came around because I wanted to try all the heroes. But
sure, you can get past a lot of that stuff. But that's kind of, it brings me back to my original point. What makes them special and unique? And these backstories, this thick, rich character tapestry makes them feel like really crafted little $10 entities to me. Part of the reason I think Blizzard may have even done this consciously, but part of the reason that their heroes are $10 on the standard, unless they're on sale, feels like it might be because they're presenting you with this extremely well-rendered, well-thought-out representation of something that's had, in some cases, decades of story treatment. And they're giving it to you in this beautifully created, rendered package, and somehow that makes them feel more valuable to me. And so I've really had to question when I spend $10 on a hero without even blinking an eye, when I won't do that for some other game, well, what's the difference? And part of it's just, you know, pure Blizzard fanboyism, which I admit I have, but also I think it's, I feel like these are special little, they're almost like amiibos in a way, except they're just in the game.
The word I'm thinking of is homage. They're like a homage to each character.
Sure.
I didn't play a lot of Endgame during Burning Crusade. I feel like I missed out for all you Warcraft people, I know. Mm. But I love Kael'thas. Like, he has so much flavor to him. The way he shouts all arrogant-like, and mm-hmm. like, I can tell a lot of love went into making the Kael'thas character.
Mm-hmm.
And it really speaks to me the way, just his the whole top-down design, like, the whole thing is very... Like, I feel arrogant when I'm playing him.
Right.
I want to talk smack to people. And I'm the best player on the team. And my hair is gorgeous.
Well, you just kind of described what they do well. And that is that even if you weren't completely familiar with him as a character from the lore, because you didn't play that endgame or didn't know much of the backstory, even then you're still being presented with something that appears to have a lot of layers and a lot of nuance. And it's not just some, this guy shoots fire. You can tell because he's got fire on him. It's different
right, through
than that.
Through the voice and animation, they really sell what that character is about.
Yeah, yeah. And we got questions this week, people saying, well, why do you think this game makes it different? And I wanted to address it. So there it is. I've addressed it. I know what else makes it different. And I don't want to drop this bomb too hard on everybody, but we found out this weekend through, I don't know who said it in the chat room, Artanis is Sinatra backwards. Think of that. Frank Sinatra, dude, that's what you're doing every time you pop him out. And he says, fill my heart with a song. And then you take him out and dive dash and come back. He's great. Anyway.
So you think that's intended?
It might be.
It has to be, right?
It kind of does, doesn't it? Do you think they sit around? Now it makes me want to go look at everybody else's names.
Okay, and do you think it has something to do with the Illuminati?
No, that I don't think.
The Blizzard Illuminati.
Everyone.
Anyway, Artanis, let's talk about him. We got some first impressions. More than first, I think. We've had a pretty good time with him this week, especially John. So, John, I'm going to defer to you a lot on this. But the big question everybody wants to know is not whether he's fun. And he is, and we'll talk about that and all that stuff. But is he a viable main first pick warrior tank? And there's people are split on that. So what was your experience like? What do you think? Where does he fit in the comp?
My answer is a little split on it, too. He is not a universal choice like Leoric or Johanna. They are warriors that you can feel good about picking no matter what situation you're going into. There's really not a map that you say, they're not good on this map. Mm-hmm. You know, they're universally very, very good warriors. And Artanis is a very good warrior, but he starts to skew a little bit more into that brawler that we see with, you know, characters like Sonya.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of rides that line, depending on how you choose your talents, between main tank and this brawler warrior type that we're looking at. I would say that he performs exceptionally well if you go with a two warrior combo. And you can free him up to do a little more aggressive damage dealing talents. He isn't going to hit the same heights as other warriors if you try to go main tank with him.
Mm. Well, you seem to be able to you're doing a lot of sustain and a lot of living compared to what I expected from that character. Because he doesn't have a get out of jail card. He doesn't really have a quick escape. The only thing close to it is his dash thing. And that just brings him right back to where he was. So he doesn't really escape anything. Unless you interrupt him, I guess.
Yeah.
He seems to, like, when I'm with you and I'm playing with you and I see that shield popping so often the way you've built him, it reminds me of Johanna. Like, I feel like I'm playing with her again because you just live through everything, it seems like.
He can be very tricky to kill with that shield. And if you spec him in such a way that his shield is popping more often and you choose a lot of defensive talents, he can stay in fights that you would just think he should be out of this. He also, because of his trait, which is where the shield activates when he's below 50% health, he's also one of the most stressful characters to play in this game.
I was going to ask you about that because it's unpredictable, right? You don't quite know when things are going to pop and how quick you're going to get it and all that.
Yeah, and you have to play him, you know, understanding that you're not going to be going in full health all the time. A lot of times you're going to be engaging, you know, with 75 to 50% of your life, and that's a normal engage for him, and that's okay. you know, that doesn't mean run away. That can sometimes still mean stay in. And that's one of the hardest things to adapt to with him, is looking at your health bar and say, oh, I've got 25% health. Let me just get in a fight right now. Like, you don't do that with other heroes. But it's kind of normal for Artanis.
So, Bo, your experience with the character has been nil because you don't have StarCraft II ordered. I want to get to that whole controversy in a second. But you played around and with Artanis a lot because that thing's heavily in the rotation. Almost every quick match we played had an Artanis on the other side. I can't think of one where it didn't, actually, now that I think about it. What is your impression? Because you've had to either tank alongside it or you know, be a player in a comp that included him. Do you feel like from another player's perspective, you would be one of those people in Hero League going, oh my gosh, I can't believe you freaking picked him?
No, I think with a lot of heroes, like, I'm just starting to get back on the Rexxar train. I think there's going to be a period of discovery where if he's not immediately broken and OP, then it's going to take some time to figure out how to leverage his strengths. And he definitely has strengths. I think he falls in the Sonya camp on the opposing team. He's never the first person you want to beat up, especially with the shield. You basically kind of want to ignore him and maybe stun him, get a, you know, peel him off your backline. And also, when the momentum of battle is going your way, he can't leave. He has no escape. Like, a Sonya can spear out. You know, there's a Illidan can get away. He's more in the Kerrigan camp in that sense, where it's even Kerrigan can lunge away. Slash dash is such a bad ability for actual mobility, even though it's a lot of mobility. It doesn't actually bring you anywhere, right?
No, it's like a rubber band, really. It's just annoying.
So, like, if the fight goes bad and you're in, you have zero options except walking. And boy, does Artanis have a very proud walk. it might actually even be slower than Leoric.
Yeah.
It probably technically
it's a little more noble looking. Like, he looks like he's a little more straight back, chin up. But
but because he doesn't have stuns, he doesn't play like, you know, the shield counts as a pseudo deep health pool if you build it so it keeps proccing. But it's effectively, you know, increasing your health pool each time it procs. But without any way to stun or any utility besides just pure attack damage, there's not much you can do. The swap is nice, but that's good when things are going your way. It doesn't do anything for you again when things aren't going your way. Mm-hmm. So I think he's very much... I played... My best experience with him was in a Hero League where we picked Sonya. I was Kerrigan. There was an Artanis and Jim and a Jaina, and we just dove the whole team the entire time.
Yeah.
And that was really fun. And he was the slowest of the divers, but he is very strong. So I think he has a role. I think we're just waiting to find out what it is. But like John said, it's you primary tank. You want to play a dive comp because he's got no peels.
That's true. No peel is no good. And also, I would just say for the record, if you're looking for maybe in the same way when you pick Sonya, you want a tank that's dealing out a bunch of damage, especially with a specific build order. John seemed to be dishing it out pretty heavy.
But we'll see. I'm gonna eager to try him.
Yeah, but you can't because here's why. You can't get Artanis, Sinatra, because you didn't pre-order StarCraft II, and a lot of people are up in arms about this. Now, this is one of the first times where I'm like, I think I agree with the pissed off people. I'm not angry about it, but I understand the consternation, because for me, it comes down to a bunch of players are going to get a competitive edge in a week's time. They're going to get their hands on a player that, if he's a good meta player or whatever his role ends up being in the game, somebody, you know, a bunch of people who are potential foes have this guy for a whole week before everyone else can even think about getting him. And that seems patently unfair for a game that is this competitive. Am I wrong to feel that way?
Well, I think there are five roles on a team. So, you know, if you play support, then you're not like there's a place for you if you don't have the pre-order. I don't feel like I can't join a team, and I don't feel behind because I'm getting used to other players playing him. I think, like we talked, John mentioned last week, that it's like feedback on feelings rather than on what they should do. Or, you know, I'm assuming very smart people are behind a lot of these promotions, right? But it feels bad. It feels bad that everyone's like, man, Artanis is great. Having fun playing Artanis. My Twitter's blown up with Artanis stuff. And I'm like, well, it just, you know, I'd like to play him too.
Yeah.
it's like I am not a part of the club because I didn't pre-order. And I will play StarCraft at some point, but I, you know. It just feels bad. That would be the summation. You can rationalize it and have all kinds of explanations of how you'd like it better or what could be better, but it wasn't fun for me.
Well, I have a
not the end of the world.
I have a different opinion on. Well, when I bought StarCraft or pre-ordered it, they hadn't announced the deal yet that you were going to get Artanis with it. I think they had said something that maybe there'd be a hero tie-in when I did it, but it was pretty early because I knew I was going to play that campaign and I was excited about it. So when I heard about that, it was just like, ah, sweet, a bonus. But I figured that whole time that though John and I had pre-ordered StarCraft II, we would all get it about the same time. Like we would all end up with that hero on whatever Tuesday they released it, and those who had the pre-order would just get it for free, or not for free, but they would just get it. And those who didn't, like you, would get it too, but you just have to pay for it or buy it with gold, like always. So that's the part that I'm a little bugged by. Well,
usually it comes out a week early on the PTR, and this time was also sort of different in that it's out in the main client, but there are no skins. Like, it's not a full release. It feels almost like PTR on the main client in a weird way.
It does feel that way, because I've been noticing that as well. You know, you don't get the alternate skin that's for sale, the purifier Artanis, and you don't. There's not even a master skin. So right now I'm a level 9. There's no way I'm going to be 10 by the time that he's live in the game. But you know, even if I wanted to get the master skin on Artanis, if I was able to, I couldn't at the moment.
Right. Yeah, and that's the other stinker is none of that stuff's in there. So they, you know, in a weird way, they threw a bone to non pre-purchasers, but not really. I mean, the character's still the character, and I don't know. I just hope it's not a thing they start to do a lot more of. And it's not like they've got a new release of a game happening every 3 weeks, so it's not like they can do this too many more times. But, you know, they did it retroactively with Diablo. If you logged into, what was it, logged into Diablo and started a Season 4 character, you got Diablo or something?
No, you had to purchase Reaper, if I'm not. Like, you had to own Diablo 3 Reaper Souls, and if you didn't own it, then you could get it. And I think the good news, what did we get gold?
I don't remember.
I wonder if we did. I know there was a controversy. I don't know if they ended up fixing it, but
so
I already bought Diablo, so I got nothing from that.
Yeah, I got nothing from that either.
There've been a couple of them. So Reaper of Souls, you got Vala.
Yeah.
In Heroes of the Storm.
Right.
And that was before Heroes of the Storm was even out. So that felt okay because you bought the game, and then you knew when Heroes of the Storm came out, you were going to get a Vala for it. Like, that's a character you don't have to buy or worry about. The Diablo one was weird because during the whole Diablo event, you know, the game's been out for a long time, and then it was just like, yeah, if you play Diablo 3 and do this, you get Diablo. It's like, well, great, but I've had Diablo for forever. Like, this isn't doing me any favors at all. And then Artanis is kind of in that weird place of, you know, again, it's nice that it's for a character that's not already in the game that we haven't had a chance to spend money on, but I do think I agree it does kind of suck that we got him early. Mostly I don't think it's worth quite the big stink that a lot of people are making of it.
Yeah,
but I think that it could potentially be a big problem, because the nice thing is he came out and he didn't feel like the most overpowered thing ever.
Yeah.
He came out and felt like I loved him, but there's a lot of people who don't. And, you know, if you follow the meta and the logs and all that, he's not doing super great.
Right.
So at least he didn't come out and he wasn't the greatest hero in the game.
Well, like Leoric came out and there were a few days there before they patched some of that stuff where he felt way OP. It was clearly needed a tweak. And I feel like that's been true for a lot of other stuff. But then Morales, I thought she was a little, not OP, but she was, you know, she was providing some healing I'd never seen in the game before. And she got beefed, you know, she didn't get nerfed. She got buffed. So I don't know. Who knows? The freaking
The heroes, when they come out, they're never going to be perfect when they come out, because I think it's up to the community. We're going to figure out how to break things and how to do all that stuff. I think it's just more being left out. That, to me, that was the key feeling of it, is just being left out of it. Mm-hmm. And I even don't mind, let's say I'm going to buy Artanis with gold, I get StarCraft later, I don't end up with anything from that promotion. That's fine, because I do want Blizzard to do things to bring people into Heroes. It's not like Hearthstone, where people log in on the can and, you know, they get a lot of engagement from a lot of different places. You have to sit down and conscientiously play some Heroes. So if they're doing things to incentivize that, then great. And if I don't get anything from it, I'm getting other players to play with. So that's good, too.
Yeah.
But I don't like being left out.
No, nobody does. If you want to learn more about Artanis/Sinatra, you can look up this free PDF-based comic book up on the StarCraft II site. It's all part of this lead up to Legacy of the Void, and it looks pretty good. I haven't read it yet. I just downloaded it, and I'm going to check it out. But it's all up in the art.
It was good. I really like the StarCraft content leading up to its release. It's all
and you've stated great. For the record before, you love that lore. You love that universe.
I don't all the stuff sort of happening for me. It's not going to be. I say that, but I may end up playing it. That's my relationship with games. I won't play that game, and then it releases, and I play it immediately.
Yeah,
so.
It makes sense. It's like Heroes. I'll buy a Hero.
But I love StarCraft. StarCraft is great stuff.
Yeah, it's good. So let's talk about Stitches and what the hell he's doing. So this is really weird. You sent a video around in our Slack that we keep for the show, and it was some captured video from a replay of a game on the docks, where freaking Stitches went behind. So he's behind his walls, first layer of walls. His outers, basically, and he went and hid behind part of it and shot a hook out to where normally you'd be fighting the siege camp on the bottom lower left. And he pulled a siege giant over into his area there behind walls. And none of the walls had been torn down yet. Oh, Siri, I didn't say your name. Stop. Why does Siri think I said their name just now? That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Anyway, pulls him over in there, and then this siege giant spends the next, I don't know, however long, it was a long time, bunch of levels went by, trying to make his way back to where his buddy is, and he can't get over there, so he's just sort of walking into the force field of the wall, can't get out. And what ended up happening is somebody brought their gym down there and started pounding him and beat the one that was left, and then nothing happened. He kind of sat around going, what's going on? So basically, nobody knows if the Stitches did it on purpose and knew about the exploit or the bug or whatever you want to call it. Some would call it a feature. I don't know that I would.
I felt like it was intended. I mean, that's my feeling. I don't know for sure. But yeah.
The commentary on the video, they were like, well, maybe they were just trying to snag somebody who was in there fighting. But it was early enough and weird enough position that I kind of felt like maybe that guy had done some custom match tomfoolery and figured it out and then tried it there.
Yeah, and the other curious thing, too, was that because the monster's leash, I don't think the base was shooting. You'd think the base would shoot the siege giant, right?
Right.
Like the forts, the inner keep. It's keep in the inner, yeah.
But it's but it's neutral at that point, so it wouldn't shoot it, right?
Well, yeah, it's leashing, so I don't think bot like the minion waves and stuff, aggro and stuff that's leashing.
Yeah, and it never touched it. It just sort of wandered there. So basically, until you get that outer gone,
So what happened was the enemy team went to go steal the far side camp and saw that there was, oh, sweet, there's only one siege giant here. Great. Beat it up. And then the pad didn't show up. And that's why they were watching the replay, because they couldn't figure out why he couldn't capture the camp, because fair and square, it looked like he would capture the camp.
Yeah. And poor Jim just standing there looking around like, what the hell's going on? And
just devastated.
He probably occurred to him at some point that, oh, well, the other one's not sitting here cowering. That's because there's no such thing as one being gone. It's only ever, if one of them is beat down to his health points are gone, he's crouched with his hands over his head, shaking like he's been defeated.
I think it's worth experimenting on a few other maps, because some of the comments that I read on the video, or there's a Reddit thread associated with it, saying that like real Stitches players kind of been doing this stuff for a little while, maybe.
Really?
Yeah.
They can all go to hell, Stitches players.
It was mind-blowing to me, first time I saw it.
Stitches players, rather, not Stitchers players. You can hear this show on Stitcher right now, by the way. That's actually a thing you can do. And they've got Stitcher, all kinds of hooks to get you there.
Stitcher owned and operated by Stitches.
Yes, exactly. So he was being a real bastard, and I just thought it was funny. But here's what I believe to be the case. So some have said, is it a bug, an exploit? Is it a creative map mechanic? Is it just the way it is because Stitches has these abilities and you got to watch out for him? I say no. Battlegrounds have to stay comp neutral. They have to. You can't go in there with a group and say, well, all right, because they randomly got docks and they happen to have Stitches, the other team doesn't, they therefore have this. It's a significant advantage to be able to control a camp like that and have it never be a problem until your first outer's gone.
I think it's kind of small.
Do actually. You really? I think it would suck. I'd be pissed if we lost a match on that.
I mean, I don't think it's going to win anybody a match. Mm. And so here's the thing. It's on their side. Camps,
yeah,
which usually you don't go for later in the game anyway. So it's preventing anybody from stealing it early, true, but it's also preventing them from getting it. Like, if you watch that video, they don't ever capture the camp and get to send it.
They actually can't, so, can they? Or I guess they could fight it
inside the base, and maybe that would work. I don't know. Maybe. Like, that's the thing. We don't get to see it because they don't try and take it. But yeah. The point is they don't get the benefit from the camp either. So you're removing an option for your enemy to take it, but they're also effectively removing their ability to take it. Mm. And they only remove it for as long as that wall remains intact. As soon as that gate's destroyed, he can get out, he can go back, and they can take it again. Mm. So to me, if you're winning that fight, if you're actually pushing and you're getting through the walls, and especially on Blackheart's Bay where he's blowing up walls for you and stuff like that, if you're playing the map effectively, it's not the biggest loss in the whole world. Like, is it a tactical advantage to some degree if you're going up against a team that's being real pro mercs? Mm. Yeah, you take away a camp. But, you know, like I said, you're also removing your ability to use it. And, you know, and even if you say, okay, well, we'll get it and we'll capture it.
Right. And it's your camp too. That's the other thing, is you're the part I hadn't considered so much is that you're usually going after camps closest to you and then maybe stealing those closest to your enemy. And you've eliminated the one that you have the easiest access to.
Right.
And that's a really good point.
To me, it's a fun little exploit thing, but I don't think they lost that match because that happened. You think
Blizzard fixes it? It's kind of like when they made it so you had to have an inner fort removed before you can do any damage to the core, because when Morales came in with her ship, that would have changed the whole world, and you just fly in there anytime and ham at it and then leave, and we figured out the hard way, and so did the other team.
Right.
I mean, they thought we were going to do it too. They all hearth back because they're like, oh shit, she's got a ship, and we were there pounding on sand. I mean, nothing happened. Except we all died.
Well, we died.
But it reminds me of that. So maybe they'll just do something where if walls are up, you can't, Stitches can't do that or something. I don't know.
Or maybe just neutral mercs can walk through gates.
Hey, that's all right.
Until they've been flagged as a side, they can just move through the gate just fine.
That part would work. That would work for me. That solves all the problems. Because you still got the cute, stupid idea of doing it, and that's fun for videos or whatever, but you're not screwing the other team up. Potentially. And you're right. The more the way you explained it, I think I agree. You're not really dinging them that hard. It's a little bitty, tiny strategic advantage, if that. And this is all assuming that nobody gets wise to it and hurries up and gets that wall pushed in, which is not going to take that long.
No.
And then that thing comes out, and then all bets are off. And what Stitch is going to do, go hide on the other side and keep doing it when he's supposed to be out tanking people? Like, you know, there's disadvantages to having Stitches trying to find the exact right position to try to hook something weird and pull it over into his camp.
And specifically on that map, that alleyway cuts between their walls. So you could technically, even if you hadn't gotten through the first wall and towers, you could kind of cut in the middle and take down the wall if you just, everybody wanted to focus on it and free that guy and then be fine. But again, like, that's a lot of effort to put in. And, you know, as I say that, I'm like, yeah, I wouldn't do that just to capture one mercenary camp. That's not worth it.
Probably not. You'll get him the next time around when that wall goes down. So,
yeah,
it's fine. Battle.net voice chat has been announced. It's going to be tested specifically, well, starting next week, the 27th, with Overwatch. But you got to think, this is coming to everything, right? This is the long-rumored voice chat client being implemented into the Battle.net client across all games. At least that's what's been rumored. It appears that's now what's going to be released. They're going to test it with that and nothing else yet. So probably not Heroes right away. But the idea that you could use this for Heroes down the road instead of, you know, everybody running Skype or TeamSpeak or whatever proprietary thing you want to do, you just stay in the client. Here are two things that have to happen. It has to sound really, really good, and it has to have no latency that is detectable. If you can accomplish those two goals, they may have something with this.
Yeah. They also, well, what scares me about this most of all is behavioral controls. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I want those things that you mentioned, Scott, but given what the kinds of things that get written in chat, a chat for your game lobby in Heroes or in Overwatch, seems like it might not be, like, it's not an experience I'm necessarily looking forward to. I'm very nervous about it.
I guess I assumed from the announcement that it probably meant it would always be optional. In other words, there'd be five of us on and we all decide we want to play.
Sure.
And we link up and we hook up and now we're in and you got to be friends to hear each other. But you make a good point. What if you're just in a random and...
Well, you know, a lot of people are using curse voice. Like, mm-hmm. So the idea is, you know, if you're randomly assigned people, then voice chat is much more efficient than typing.
Yeah.
I think there's consensus on that for sure. So if the... not the meta, but I mean, if the popular sort of thing to do when you're playing solo or playing with just two people or, you know, party smaller than five is to voice chat because you have an increased edge of winning. So everyone, it's accepted practice. Then, you know, you're free to not do it, but then you're also free to not have as optimal a chance of winning your games because other people are willing to put up with it. And that's kind of what worries me a bit about. That's why I don't use curse voice. I've met a lot of people like, hey, man, you have curse voice. And I say no. And I could very easily install it. But I'm nervous about not even just that it's going to be sweary McSweary pants or 5-year-old pro player.
Yeah.
But just that it might be. I just might not like the people hanging out.
Right.
With
No. This is why I can't stand Xbox Live and I immediately mute everybody when I'm playing on PS4 or Xbox. I just like, nope, don't want to hear a single thing from any of these Call of Duty players. Because all I can hear is weird Orange County rap in the background and some guy yelling at somebody and some swearing kid telling his mom to F off. He's playing right now. Like, I don't need it in my life.
And the biggest bong rips.
Yeah, the biggest bong. Always rips. But you know, like, John, you don't want that. You don't want that Xbox Live experience, at least the toxic side of it. I'm sure there's good uses for that. And there always were when we would do things with friends, but I don't have any desire for like general public open access, lets everyone talk at the same time kind of thing.
Oh yeah. I'm in absolutely the same boat. I never play with a headset on Xbox Live or PlayStation 4. I never do it. If I play a game that has it to where I can hear other people, I immediately mute them. I've got zero interest in it. And I don't even have the interest to find out if I potentially have interest in it. Like, it's just, they could just be like, hi guys, let's have a great game. Muted.
Mute.
Like, I don't want to hear any of it.
Yeah.
If I'm on with friends and stuff like that, voice chat is great. It's phenomenal. It's an important part of the game. I don't like Heroes of the Storm as much if I can't be on Skype talking to friends. There's a whole social aspect.
But you just said it, talking to friends. And that's the key here. So when it's just random folks, I just don't think it works. It's weird. We as human beings, if we're going to make these kinds of connections, I mean, on paper, look, years ago when they were dreaming of a great future where we could all play video games online and be in all parts of the world and communicate openly, that seems cool on paper, man. That's like, yeah, we should totally be doing that. And then we got to do it in like 2005 or so, and we went, oh, shit, this is bad. This is real bad. We don't want this. And why didn't we want it? Because you're missing all of the other things and connections that make a relationship work. Even if it's a simple video game one where I want to play Heroes with my buddies. But it's an important piece. So I really hope they're thinking or keeping that in mind.
This is a
chance for them to say, this could be a really good protocol and system, and it may work across our games, but it needs to be like real ID friends at each other, and that's it. It's not just open mic night.
I'd like to counter that a little bit, because I do like to play a lot of solo queue and Hero League and stuff, and I'd very much like to be like, I find it depressing that I can't just talk to strangers on the internet because I'm fearful that they're all crappy. Because it makes the game so much better. There is a lot of coordinated play that happens, especially in Heroes, where it's like, who are we focusing on at this given moment? How are we comboing our abilities for maximum effect? And I want, like, that is more satisfying gameplay than just relegated to being mute. So like, I sometimes feel like, well, I'm just going to turn it all off, but I feel like I'm just going to shut this down. Like, I actually want us to progress in the direction where I feel comfortable talking to people. And I think there needs to be more than just voice chat. I think we need some sort of way of assigning people reputation so that when I get paired with people, if I have friendly players on my team that are you know, focused, that they're flagged somehow or it's communicated to me so I can mute those people that have the asshat symbol on their name. Yep. Whereas the guy with the halo on his head, I'll gladly, you know, listen to him. And if, like, he's not my favorite person in the world, that's fine, because we're concentrating on the game and we're getting more enjoyment from it. I feel bad. I don't like the let's not socialize because we're all there's horrible people out there. I'd really like a game to step up and do that. And Blizzard's like a leader in a lot of things. So I kind of hope it's more than just, we have voice chat in our game. That's not very special.
Well, they did it with WoW and nobody used it. They had that built right into the game. And that was supposed to be everyone's way of getting away from Ventrilo or whatever the standards were at the time. And it was awful. It was unusable and sounded terrible.
It didn't sound good, but there were some things about it that were cool. Like one thing that I loved about the WoW voice chat that, you know, most people don't remember anything about it because it was a patch and everyone was like, okay, we're not using this. And that's all everybody experienced of it. But when you used it, whoever was talking, their name would pop up in a little box on screen and you could select them to target the character. So you could theoretically, if you're playing WoW and someone's like, I need a heal, a healer could just click their name and immediately know that's the person that needs healing.
That's
I can
amazing.
Throw it at them. That stuff
amazing.
Is cool. And if yeah. they integrate that sort of stuff into this, that would be really cool. Like if somebody says something during a Heroes match and maybe a little overlay icon, you know, just gives you an icon showing the direction they're at, like it appears at the edge of the screen. So if someone's like, oh, guys, I need help. You've got this little, like, arrow magnifying glass thing up in the corner saying, like, this is where that came from, and you know to head in that direction. Like, that kind of stuff could be really, really cool. But again, it has to have that. It has to have the quality. It has to be good. And the other reason the WoW thing didn't work is because it was an in-game client. You could never have the, oh, I got disconnected from WoW, but I'm still online. I can tell people I'm going to get back in. Mm-hmm. If somebody disconnected, you had no way of telling them.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to lose your internet connection and not have any way to tell them. But if you sometimes the client just crashes or whatever, and you're, you know, it'd be nice to be able to say, I think I'm DCing. Hang on a sec, you know, and they would know what's going on. I completely agree. If they can hit all those points, then great. And I'm with you, Bo. I mean, if you're in a game and you're seeing something's going wrong that is easily rectified, it'd be nice if you could say, hey, guys, maybe we should do that or whatever. And they may still need to have the option to just go, mute. I don't want to hear that guy tell me anything. But at least having the option there might be okay. And if it's quick and easy to mute somebody who's being an ass, that's probably important. Absolutely what we can't do is have a game that is either open mic all the time for everybody without any rule sets or something where it's hard for me to go. I got to go through a bunch of menus or something to mute them. It needs to be like quick hit the
hit
V.
Tab,
yeah. Hit
click something.
Control V for the, to turn off voice or something. Something has to happen quickly for you to turn that stuff off. Anyway, we'll see how it goes. We have no idea until it hits, but it sounds like Tuesday we're going to get to start testing it with Overwatch, and we'll get a good idea what that's all about. Let's talk about the Hallows End event. We had speculated, I want to say a couple of weeks ago, about the idea of Blizzard doing more with holidays and stuff, and they're doing it. So, and specifically with Heroes of the Storm, Headless Horseman's Charger mount, you can buy that. You'll also be able to get Buccaneer Falstad skin, which might be the coolest skin in the game at the moment. Really, really well done. And you get week-long bonus XP starting at 10 a.m. Pacific Data Time. That's October Daylight Time. Data? What am I saying?
Data
Pacific
time.
Data Time.
Pacific
I like that
Data Time is a Star Trek reference to what time it is. Anyway, that's on October 27th. That's the same day that we are Artanis becomes available for everybody. And that ends 10 a.m. PST on November 3rd. And games played that award XP will grant an additional 50% in all regions. Now, I assume that stacks with the other 50% when I play with friends. Is that correct?
It's 50% on your base XP. So the other boosts you have, it's not fit. Those all get added separately, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, so you get your base XP, you add a stim pack, then you're getting whatever that bonus is added to it. But then you take the base XP again and add the 50% from friends, and you add that. So it's all just separate.
Yeah, it's like it's added. It's the multiplication happens separately, and the addition, then everything's added together.
And
if
you play 25 games during that event, you'll get the new Jack-O-Lantern portrait, and this will persist until November 17th. And it's about the same time the Simpsons show the Treehouse of Horror episode, about the 17th or so, they'll be done with it. So that sounds all right.
Yeah, do you think there's like a little thing like kick 100 jack-o'-lanterns at the start of a map or something?
Hope so. I love that about the.
It's play 25 games isn't really an event, and get there's nothing that makes it a Hollow's End event like in the game.
Right.
There's, you know, so I'm not complaining.
Pumpkins,
it's just
kicking pumpkins is a great idea. Like,
yeah,
I for one miss finding that goblin at the beginning of the match and hearing Deckard Cain explain himself. I miss it. It was great. It was a nice little thing, and it's a nice touch. And if they made that the usual thing, and it can even be the same. Capture the runaway pumpkin as
the
couple
the
of legs.
Horseman would say his poem.
Right. Yes.
I'm the headless horseman. Here are jack-o'-lanterns. You must kick them. Yeah. I don't know what rhymes with lantern.
Or just kill one. It's just one. Let's say it's just one. You got to DPS it down. Don't do anything too hard so it's not a bunch of work. And then reskin it for every holiday. Even that would be okay. I just want to have something to do there during that little warm-up.
Yeah, I think if you're going to call it, and maybe this was a quick thing where they were like, we can put this stuff in, and this is what we have, and it doesn't require a ton of work, because we know there's definitely areas they're trying to work on the game instead. Mm-hmm. But I would love to see the Battlegrounds get Hollow's End themed, or, you know, Halloween themed, like a bunch of jack-o'-lanterns down the lanes and stuff like that. Stuff that makes it feel like this is an event that's going on, not just, hey, we added two new things to the store and you're going to get a little more XP and maybe you'll get a portrait at some point.
Yeah, I predict that this stuff's all coming. Everything you just described is the thing they'll end up doing because they can't resist. I just think it comes with, you know, with time. It's when they've got 200 heroes or maybe even, well, what are they at now? 70 something heroes?
When they don't have a insane MMR problem to work through.
Yeah, all that stuff. Like, they're going to get through all of that. They're going to have better observer modes first. They're going to do things that we want them to do. But I think that, you know, if there's one thing Blizzard likes to do, it's to polish stuff until it screams. You know, it's so shiny. Everyone loves it. And they'll do that with this.
That's why Dustin Browder yells so much.
That's right. Well, that and his hair, people pull his hair all the time.
Yeah.
By the way, what does Artanis think of all this?
Let's fly away.
All right. Cool.
let's fly away.
On my Void Ray.
Oh my gosh. Artanis is so much cooler now.
I know.
He was already awesome, and now he's way cooler.
Well, when you turn that name around, you get some funny stuff happens. Also, the Hallow's End Ultimate Bundle will come out, $53.04 USD. That's Kerrigan plus Countess Kerrigan skin. And these are all obviously very Halloween oriented, but it's nothing you haven't seen before. Abathur gets the Skelethur, or Abathur plus the Skelethur Abathur skin. Tychus gets his Tychus Infested skin. Buccaneer Falstad skin for Falstad, which is new. Headless Horseman's Charger mount is in that bundle. $53.04. That's pretty expensive.
It's got the heroes in them.
Yeah.
And the Tychus Infested skin alone is $15 regular price, right? So,
well, since I own everything but Abathur and Kerrigan, I ought to do okay on that deal.
Yeah, I think I'm thinking about getting it as well, because I definitely want the mount, because I like mounts in this game a lot. I always feel good when I buy those.
Yeah.
And I already have the Tychus, which I don't remember ever buying, but I have it. Mm-hmm. I don't know where that came from.
That happens to me too, dude. It happens to me all the time. I have Brightwing. I don't know how the hell I got Brightwing.
You have a Heroes of the Storm Angel, maybe.
I have no idea. But yeah, the price should be okay. They also have just the Hallow's End bundle for $21.35. That includes Falstad and the Buccaneer Falstad skin, and then the Headless Horseman's Charger mount. Kind of a common combo lately with what they put out. So there you go. It's all good stuff. It's I would like it to be more eventy, but I think that's just a matter of time.
Yeah, we'll get there.
When you say good luck, have fun, just go, ooh, scary. Good luck, have fun, everyone.
I would like to, that's a good idea. I'd like to share with everybody a moment that happened in a game we played the other day. And I'm just going to play it, and then we'll get to our next story. So hold on, check this out.
Grenade right in the puss.
I think today's episode might be called Grenade Right in the Puss.
I like it.
You think
you got to put the grenade.
Okay. you had done, so what had happened, just for some context, we were playing a pretty competitive game, and Gorath, who was playing Morales, tossed your grenade and hit somebody at the just perfect moment as an Artanis, I think.
Yeah.
And just destroyed him.
It was an Artanis. Yeah. And yeah, hit with a displacement grenade.
Yeah.
The best, Morales's best ability. One of the best abilities in the game.
It really is. And when it happened, all that came to my head was, you nice shot with the grenade in the puss. That's all I could think of saying. So I said it. So there it is.
Yeah.
Take it for what it is.
Good description. I think that's actually where it hit.
Okay, good. Heroes World Championship group stage ahead of BlizzCon. The World Championships officially kick off at BlizzCon's opening week, where the initial matches of each group will be played. So we know who the casters are going to be. We know what the schedule is going to be. When I'm pretty excited about all this. There's a lot of casters and hosts, man. Aren't there? Look at that. Anna. Whoops. I skipped past the whole thing. Damn it. There it is. Anna Prosser. You got Babel. Is that how you say his name? Babel. Kubi. I know him. Gillyweed. Grubby. He's the one from, he's not from here. He's from a different place, right? I don't know. He's from like Germany or somewhere. I don't know where he is. I don't follow him that much. Calarius.
He's a European guy, yeah.
Solid Jake and TOD or Todd.
Is he go to by be clear, it's not the Calaris from, it's not the Protoss. Wait, that's not spelled the same.
Oh.
It looks like a Protoss name, though. He's not a Protoss.
Oh, he's not a Protoss.
What is it backwards?
Oh, is it Cialis? Oh, my gosh, there's a character called Cialis.
not a member of the Rat Pack.
His ultimate is four-hour erection. Qualified teams are Braveheart, Cloud9, of course. Is it Logi GIA or Logi? How do you spell that?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Logagia.
These are the over-the-seas stuff. Natus Vincere. Team Dignitas, know them. Team DK, Team YL, Tempo Storm, those are your teams. And the schedule starts, let's see, Wednesday, October 28th is your first, let's see, what is that? Wednesday. This coming Wednesday. Holy shit!
Yeah, it's they can't have it all at BlizzCon, so right. They're doing a bunch of matches ahead of schedule, and you'll be able to probably watch that on Twitch and YouTube, I'd have to imagine.
Do you guys feel bad about the team that got bumped because they can't get visas or something? Do you remember hearing about that? Let's see if I can find the name of the team. It was
which team was it that got bumped? I remember hearing about it.
E-Star, they took first place in the qualifiers, cannot come to the BlizzCon finals because of visa issues. That is lame.
That sucks.
Yeah, that seems like a thing you could fix, but I guess this sort of stuff's harder than I think it is, probably.
I thought they were changing it to where esports people were actually getting put on the same visas that are reserved for athletes to make it easier for that.
Oh, interesting. I hadn't heard that, but that would make sense. I don't know why they got blocked out. They're not wanted for something, are they? As far
Maybe
as we
they
know.
They are for being for going top. All in top.
Yeah, they had all five of them on top on that match. Don't let them in here.
Cold. I mean, it's very unfortunate for them having earned the first place, not being able to make it, I think it's a little bit has to do. I don't know what the future for Heroes is in terms of them actually just having a pro league. Mm-hmm. But if they, you know, take the entire player base and people can try and compete from scratch, you're going to get teams that maybe think, well, it's a long shot if we win and I don't have all my papers in order. And, oh, we did win. Now I've got to get it all taken care of. Oh, now there's problems. Whereas if there was a pro scene, a lot of those guys would have that taken care of well in advance.
Yep.
Knowing that there's a good statistical chance they'll be having to travel regardless. So, yeah, it's a bit unfortunate. I think it's a bit easier with Hearthstone because you're one person for that kind of stuff. But with teams, that's rough.
Well, this is a real stinker, I just realized. So once these are done, the tournament resumes. First elimination matches happen live from BlizzCon November 6th, 4 p.m. I have a meeting with a Warcraft dev at 4:30. Gosh dang it! I won't want to not see that. I want to see all those.
So we're doing for Azeroth Roundtable, we're doing a live show from the guild hall like we, you know, typically do.
Sure.
And Ben got us all scheduled and all of that. And it was like coming out of a nightmare. All of a sudden, I just sat up and I was like, wait a minute. And I texted him real quick. I was like, what time are we scheduled for? And he told me and I looked and it's during the finals for Heroes. And I said, please check and see if we can get that changed. There's no way I want to miss
those. Yeah, you got it. You can't miss those. I mean, I would even bump the Warcraft dev if I had to. Because I really don't want to miss the big hero stuff during this particular year.
Yeah, this is where, and you know, I'm sure we're going to talk about this a lot in many episodes to come, but this is where having all of your esports, the pinnacle of all your esports stuff happened the week of BlizzCon is kind of, it's not fun for people. There's so much to take in. They can't take in everything. So I don't think you're getting good engagement on some of this.
Well, at home, I think they might be like, cause they can do the virtual ticket, lets you see whatever stream you want to see. So you can watch the StarCraft stuff or you can watch the other stuff or you can mix and match schedules and watch them DVR style if you want after for anything you missed. For us, we'll get all that too, but we're going to have to be there, get home and then do it.
Well, no, because it gets all spoiled. Like,
well, that's
you
true.
You may not have seen it, but if you have to like basically disconnect from Twitter till you get around to watching it.
Well, even worse, if I'm going to watch the closing ceremonies, which I usually kind of avoid, I don't like them. But when they do that, Morheim usually gets up, or somebody, Paul Sams in the past, and they'll go, well, so congratulations to Tempo Storm yesterday for the... So I'd have to avoid all that stuff, you know?
Yeah, it's not good. I don't think it's healthy. I think it made sense to celebrate esports at BlizzCon for a long time when you have Warcraft.
Yeah.
Now they're building three other, you know, World of Warcraft's still an esports game. So now they have all these esports properties, and to have them all this, like, I'd like to watch the Hearthstone finals. That'd be fun, but I'm not going to watch it the weekend of BlizzCon. I'll probably wait a little bit, but it's going to be spoiled. I'm going to know who's going to win.
Yeah. Do you think it's because, well, okay. So they used to do that international. Remember that? The StarCraft, and maybe they still do it, but they did it in France or something. And that was like their big competitive thing before BlizzCon kind of took over for all of that. You're arguing basically for not all of these world championships to end up at one place on the same weekend.
Each of these games are so incredible that they deserve their time in the spotlight. And what you're doing is saying, okay, all five games jump into a spotlight and just watch the one you're interested in. And when stuff gets spoiled, you might still like watching it. But when I know the results of a game, I'm a lot less invested in it, you know? So yeah. I think they, you know, going forward, this stuff, they need to desync the esports stuff from BlizzCon.
Well, okay, imagine this may screw things up for them, and this is, so I'm going to put myself in their brain. Let's say they said every August in Vegas, we rent out a, you know, whatever, and we do the Heroes finals for that year. That's your big championships for Heroes, let's say. And Hearthstone does it somewhere in San Francisco, and they save, you know, BlizzCon for StarCraft or something. If they split all that up, there's a very good chance that the one Blizzard-related trip I would then take that year would be the Vegas finals, and that would be it. You know what I mean? So, and part of me thinks that the reason they try to lump it all together is because it keeps BlizzCon alive in a way that maybe they haven't reached a point where these can all be self-sustaining on their own esports quite yet. I think Hearthstone has the biggest chance right now. It's got the most numbers.
They could still do one event at BlizzCon, though.
Yeah.
Right? Look at it this way, too, because StarCraft is big enough to where there are multiple StarCraft tournaments, or at least there were. It's been a while since I've followed StarCraft esports, but back when I was into it, there were multiple tournaments going on throughout the year, and BlizzCon was just another tournament amongst those tournaments. Mm-hmm. With Heroes of the Storm, this is the tournament that's going on for Heroes of the Storm. So this is where you go if you want to see it, and when it's over, you know, unless they launch something new or do something special, like, it's kind of it. I mean, I know, and I do want to clarify before anybody says anything, there are other tournaments, but I'm talking about major, big, giant payouts, like well-produced, big broadcast tournaments.
The international, the world championships, the Super Bowl, we're talking about the big, big one.
Right.
I completely agree with you, where the prize money's crazy and the working all year to get there. It's like the Olympics or whatever. We got lots of analogs in regular sports. It's the World Series, basically. You can watch lots of games during the year, and you have lots of little, you know, rivalries going on, and you can have your pennant races. We're not talking about those. We're talking about the big game, and I completely agree with you. Now, we didn't even bring this up. We didn't talk about it last week. I think it's because we felt like we did, but Blizzard and Activision launched a esports division this last week. They hired former CEO of ESPN and NFL Network's Steve Borstein, and he will serve as this division's chairman, and Mike Sepso, who is a co-founder of Major League Gaming, will be serving as senior vice president. And essentially, between Blizzard and Activision, they are making a real effort to create an environment of esports beyond anything that they've done up to this point. So I would argue that what you're asking for, Bo, and what you're saying, John, about these all getting their own limelight, I think they're working on that. Because why would you hire that and have that in place just to help manage making it all happen at BlizzCon moving forward? You know what I mean? Right. That feels too big of a deal to me for them to try to munch them all together the way they've been doing it.
Yeah, I think that's got to be the long-term plan. I feel like these, you know, Hearthstone and Heroes and maybe Overwatch, I have my feelings on first-person shooters, they're meant to be viewer-friendly games. And I think broadcasting is a different beast when you're talking sports. There's a certain type of narrative and storytelling that happens with the principal agents. You know, you get into who's the coach and who are the players and who left what team and who's fined for. I think there was like there's a news article I saw where a C9 player for League of Legends flipped off another player and got fined like $500 for it. And mm-hmm. that's a news item, right? Mm-hmm. And that's storytelling. And that's a whole other ecosystem above just the game itself, which we're all very passionate about. And that I noticed that from the other major esports, that kind of culture is there, but there isn't that really for Heroes yet. So yeah, if they've hired those people, maybe those are the kinds of conversations they're having. Hopefully. Mm-hmm.
They have to, because those are huge hires. That's big money. It's a whole division. Like, that's not small potatoes. This is them planting a flag and saying, we think esports is a huge part of the future of video games. And if they're willing to do that, and this, you know, could potentially include Call of Duty or whatever other thing they want to try to get in there. But it, clearly Blizzard is at the forefront of any Activision Blizzard division focused on esports. So we'll see what they do. I have high hopes. One of our favorite things about this show is you guys send in your phone calls and your emails, and we read them and play them. You can call us 801-471-0462. Leave us a message, short, sweet, and to the point. We'll be happy to play it on the show. Or you can email us your questions and recorded segments or questions in the form of MP3s or whatever at core@heroesforyou.com. Let's see what this guy has to say.
Hey there, Scott, John, and Bo. This is Nate, known as Cynic in the Blizzard world. I was just listening to today's episode, or I guess yesterday's, no, today's episode of The Instant, and when Michelle was talking about holiday things for Heroes and stuff like that, I had a thought. What if for one of the World of Warcraft heroes we get, what about the Headless Horseman from the Halloween event? Great show. Loving it so far. Keep it up.
Thanks. It's kind of connected to what we were talking about earlier. What do you guys think about holiday? I mean, it's still a reference to WoW, but a holiday specific character coming out of some of these holiday events.
Totally great with that. That's a brilliant idea. Mm. That you should submit it on the forums with all the other ideas. I'm picturing the Headless Horseman. He doesn't have a head that he can take off and throw it.
He has a pumpkin, right?
I have this picture now of something growing in where his head is, and then he rips it off and throws it at somebody, and then it grows back, and then he throws it. Like, that's where he gets his principal projectile.
Yeah, or it could be a stun. It could be like Meriden's hammer thing. His man, or his, I always call it the mana hammer, because that's what I, my first thing I pick when I get him. But his hammer stun thing. What's it called?
Hammer. Stun hammer.
Stun hammer. I think that's
it. The ability, the name of the ability?
Yeah, I don't remember. Yeah, I don't remember. Hammer stun man. So what's John? Can you think of any other examples of any of these kind of characters? Like, I don't know, Hogger.
Great Father Winter.
Yeah, all right. That'd be
comes
all right.
In orc and dwarf flavors.
That'd be okay.
Yeah, gotta be two skins right there. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Headless Horseman's a great choice because the fight with the Headless Horseman kind of already has like some mechanics, although some I think kind of feel a lot like what would be other mechanics. But this idea, so you fight the Headless Horseman and then at a certain point the head flies off. And if you don't kill the head in time, it just goes back to the body and he's back at full health.
Oh, that's a cool idea.
He summons pumpkins, yeah. So there's pumpkins to fight,
yeah.
And that's a good time.
His blinding could be literally a pumpkin appear on your head, and you couldn't see for a minute.
when he dies, it rains candy, and if you eat too much of the candy, you vomit.
Oh, vomiting in the game. We've been looking for that for a reason.
So. Yeah, we need a reason. So if it may be his ult is he throws candy everywhere, and then everybody has to just, you know, throw up for a little while.
I like it. I like it a lot.
I would say this, any character that I play that makes me laugh, I'll be by myself playing solo and it makes me start laughing, is a character I want in the game. Yep. So if there are more ideas, it's great. That's what makes Chen such a great hero to play.
Yeah, Chen is a riot to listen to. Martin's a hoot. Who else like, is pretty funny?
What other heroes? Like, I'm trying to think of, like, is there anyone in Noble Garden?
What they've done with that stupid murky skin's probably
funny
all they're going to
do. Yeah.
Which one of us doesn't like that? Is it you, John, that hates
me.
It?
Me. I don't like it.
That's right.
I don't like it because of the nose.
Yeah, I can't think of any others. That's the problem, is maybe the Halloween's the best suited. I can't think of anything else. But yeah,
they could have Metz and the Reindeer as a mount.
That'd be all right. That'd be okay. They should make it look like Chris Metzen, though.
Hello, John, Scott, and Bo, crew of the Core. This is Ro, and I have a little discussion topic for you guys, because I'd like your opinion and answers, too. We've played together a fair bit, and as you know, I've been playing mostly AI matches, and when I get into quick matches or basically queue up with you guys, I find that a lot of things I'm doing are very bad. Just ask John for my Sylvanas talent choices. Anyhow, I was wondering if you three have any tips for players who have been used to playing against the AI all this time, and they feel like they're ready to graduate into quick matches, actually play against other human beings. What can they do to break those bad habits, and what things should players be looking for when they are playing against other players opposed to playing against the AI? Thanks a lot. Great show. Keep it up.
I feel like it's in a way you have to relearn this stuff, man. Because like you always say to me even, like, I've been testing out so-and-so against the AI, and now I've forgotten how to play real people. And that's somebody who plays arguably the most in the three of us. Well, maybe Bo plays more, but you play a lot and you know a lot and you're good at these characters. But even a few AI matches later and you're like, uh-oh, I've forgotten why, you know, I'm behaving in ways that depend on AI behavior, and instead I'm getting dynamic human behavior, and it just jacks you up. So my advice would be get the hell off of AI and never do them again.
Yeah, you want to really limit your time with AI, because you will not realize it right away, but people are very good at pattern recognition.
Yeah.
And oftentimes it's subconscious pattern recognition. And what you will find is that you get into a rhythm and you get into a flow. And then as soon as that switches to another person that doesn't adhere to those patterns, it completely throws you for a loop. And so to kind of partially answer Ro's question, the best way to break those habits is to not form them. You know, the best thing you can do is go into an AI game or two if you're trying to learn a new hero that's completely new to you. But as soon as you can, as soon as you feel like, okay, I've got the build, I kind of understand the moves of the character, get into quick match, simply so you don't develop kind of bad habits. And if you do have those habits, really the only way you're going to get out of them is by forming good habits in quick match. Like,
when you get screwed over by the other team, instead of blaming other people or even blaming yourself, understand why. Like, the analysis is going to be the key part. That a lot of the times when people are beating you, it's because they're smarter than you at the game. And I think there's two vectors. I think there's the mechanical side of games that you go to AI to practice. I played like 100 games with Illidan in order to get his rotation down right. Mm-hmm. And just because it was fun in AI before taking him into quick match. I'd already started playing quick match games, but I just wanted to become acclimatized to the carpal tunnel syndrome inducing experience that is playing Illidan. and so it's for your mechanics. It's for practicing stutter stepping and just learning the guys and all that stuff. When you get into real games, what you're trying to do is break people's heart and exploit their mistakes and make them feel terrible. In the nicest way possible, that's what you're trying to do. So I had a game the other day, I think, we were duo queuing it. I'm not sure. I don't remember who I was playing with, but I was playing Nazebo, and I had Ravenous Spirit, and the Raynor that we were up against was shooting me, but didn't he can interrupt my Ravenous Spirit with a Q, and he did not do that. I took note of that. I said, oh, that Raynor is not queuing me, so I can Ravenous Spirit with impunity while he's around.
Yeah.
Noted. And later we got a full team wipe because rather than being hesitant to Ravenous when there was a stun up, I just knew the Raynor wasn't going to do it. Mm-hmm. These are the things you have to do. It's not enough if you want to start winning games. It's not enough to be like, oh, I'm good, I can hit my rotation. You have to figure out, this is how this person's playing. As John said, the pattern recognition is important. So here's what they're doing. Here's my strategy for usurping their expectations of me and their plan. And that's how that's the additional vector of winning, is when you start start to see what other people are doing and disrupt it, which is why I say it's good to play as many heroes as you can, even if you don't like them, because then you understand what breaks their heart. If you get into their heads, then you have their hearts.
Yeah.
I'm a terrible human being.
You really are, but I like it. I like that thinking, and it's also on them if they want to have a good game to change things up because you're taking advantage of whatever their patterns or their bad habits are. The problem with the computer is it's the same bad habit every time, and you can not only are you recognizing that pattern, but you're zeroing in on it in a way that is making you not very flexible or fluid in people play. So I would just not do those anymore. Also, you get diminished returns. Like the XP and the gold is terrible in AI matches. It's just hardly worth even running. And they get worse. It gets lower after you do a few matches. So if you really want the money, you want to play with friends or even solos in the other thing and just go for it. And I like what you said about losing. Just lose. It's fine.
Yeah. And respect your opponents. Don't just be like, oh, they're so aggro. They're so terrible. They just get lucky. Mm-hmm. Say, those guys were amazing. And yeah. Watch a replay. Yeah. Find out what it is they did. Because that's oftentimes I'm like, hey, that's a neat trick. I got beat so hard. Let me see what he did. And then I start doing it. And I'm like, oh, sweet. Like, that's, you got to learn.
Well, let's see what Artanis has to say.
Come fly.
He's still flying.
Yeah, he's flying.
What's up with that? What a weirdo. All right. Final call.
Hey, everybody. It's Nate from Northern Illinois. Just had a question. So Heroes was originally going to be called Blizzard All-Stars. Do you think it's possible that they changed the name to Heroes of the Storm so that they could potentially have Activision Heroes in there as well? Or did they just realize that that's a terrible name and that's all that it is and there should be no more looking into it? Love the show, guys.
All right. I think, well, you forget it was originally called Blizzard Dota. And then they changed it to Blizzard All-Stars, and then they changed it to Heroes of the Storm. I think they were just iterating on the name in the same way that the game was being iterated upon. And I think they wanted it to feel more epic and less like the company names in there.
Yeah, no one wants a company name in a it's not Nintendo Smash Brothers.
Right, or Nintendo. Yeah. Well, I guess it's just the GameCube. People call the Nintendo GameCube, or I guess the Nintendo 64 is an example of where they did do it. But for the most part, especially like when we're talking about the software, like nobody makes a game called Konami Metal Gear.
Right? Konami Gear.
It's Konami makes Metal Gear. It's Metal Gear whatever by Konami, but it's never
it
like...
It is a Hideo Kojima production.
Right, that's
don't
true.
Don't ever forget that.
Yeah, that's true. He gets away with it. He gets a pass. But
well, Autorship's different.
That's true. So I don't think it's any of those. I don't think it's... Here's what I believe. I do not believe we will ever see a single Activision character outside of the Blizzard umbrella in there. We'll see, you know, Overwatch and any future games they do and things like that. But we're not going to ever see a Call of... You're never going to see Sergeant Price or Colonel Price from Call of Duty. Oh, dude, that would be awesome, though, wouldn't it?
Soap running around.
Yeah, Soap running around. You're never going to see those guys. I promise you that. And also, think of some other Activision properties that are actually kind of cool like that, and I can't think of any where the characterizations would be really interesting. Like,
Tony Hawk.
Yeah.
Tony Hawk.
I guess so.
I don't want Tony Hawk.
I don't either. But that
Heroes of the Storm.
But we're just, all you did was help illustrate why this is never going to happen. They just never do that.
Yeah, I'll plant my flag. You will never see an Activision property put into Heroes of the Storm.
Including Skylander stuff. That's not coming in there either. Now, will we ever see Skylanders like treatment of the heroes characters? Maybe.
Can we talk about that for a second?
The other direction I actually think is kind of likely, but yes, go ahead.
I think so. I don't know if we'll ever see it for Heroes of the Storm, but I think when you take a look at how pivotal character swapping is for Overwatch, mm-hmm. I think it would be really cool if they did a Skylanders thing where if you didn't want to go to the menu and switch your character from the menu, you had a little portal and little like it doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to be massive figures. You just swap your Overwatch characters on and off the portal to change
that.
Between deaths.
That seems all right.
I want to do that.
That seems all right.
That's
me.
The thing I want.
It's a nice way to change things up too if you're losing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I really do believe that at some point, I've said this for months, and none of my European friends agree with me for some reason. I don't know why the Europeans are so against this, but the Amiibo / BlizzMiibo treatment of Blizzard properties for an Activision-based game, like Skylanders introducing Blizzard Collection Edition or something, I guarantee that's coming someday. There's no way they miss that opportunity. They're totally going to do it. I still stand by it.
I want it.
No one believes
I just want
me.
Figures of all the Kira's.
Oh, that's all I care
guys,
about. Yeah.
Though. That's
yeah.
all I really want.
Yeah. But. And if and maybe Blizzard would be resident. The only thing that's ever held me back on this idea is that Blizzard would be hesitant to do a game that isn't their game, you know, that they don't have a development hand in.
Right.
So that does throw some shade on it. But I'm all for the figures. That's really all I want. Collectible figures. I know they have some, but they're not the ones I want. I want like detailed, you know, amiibo style figurines.
You don't want the Walmart toy aisle.
Yeah.
Toys.
I want
well,
to
like those Disney Infinity toys are so cool. I have zero interest in Disney Infinity, but I constantly want to buy the toys for that.
Completely thing. Agree. And the new Star Wars ones look great. That Vader is badass. But they still kind of have the Disney Infinity style to them. The Marvel stuff they put in there is really cool. Like it's really cool. So yeah, more of that. And not the weird stuff they put out up till now. Or collectible statuette looking ones like Todd McFarlane style, super detailed. I'd go for that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, all that stuff sounds good. We got an email here from Alessander who says this. I like your ideas for new heroes maps, particularly Terran Mill or Taran Mill, South Shore, or Alterac Valley, or Classic Thousand Needles. A map where Deathwing flew down a random lane, setting it on fire every five levels sounds great. I would like the option to exclude maps I don't like for my random matches, though. Sky Temple Garden, all those are great, but I really don't like the new Diablo map. Or maps. He doesn't like either one of them. I can say something about that. But anyway, he says, I'm hesitant to see more maps and heroes added as I fall in love with the game the way it is, and the new designs for mechanics might be fun, might not be fun. I don't feel the need for a new shiny thing just to have something new, unless it's a skin. I love alternate skins, especially the ones with humor. The day Tassadar turns into the classic Enterprise or a Star Destroyer, I am there. Will never happen, but whatever. Alessander. Okay.
Oh, my God.
I want
a guy that turns into a Star Destroyer.
Yeah, that's pretty badass.
Giant orb flying around the map.
It's never going
to
happen.
What if that was Raynor's ult, the shadow just changed to a big triangle?
Oh, my gosh, dude. That'd be all right. That'd be great. Like the big, like Vader's, like that huge Vader one.
Yeah, and then it was Star Wars laser sounds.
Yeah.
Oh, and it played the Imperial March.
It might be 2015, guys. That might be what's happening. Here's what I'm going to say. This is probably controversial. I don't know. I think, you guys will have to tell me, but I think if you have the ability to ban your own maps out of the rotation the way you can with first-person shooters or something, I think you're kind of asking for problems because the game already is a giant matchmaking mathematical nightmare. All these kinds of games are. And to add one more in the loop, which is, all right, well, this five-man pre-made is looking good against this five-man pre-made. Oh, shoot. Both of them have chosen they only want one map and neither of them share the same map in their rotation. So I guess we're just going to have to play. They're going to have to find somebody else to play with and they lump you with somebody bad. Like, I don't want to go down that road any more than we already are.
I totally agree.
You know,
yeah. I think I'd rather have the matchmaking be good and the randomness be as good as it possibly can than introduce that level of complexity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm growing to really dislike Garden of Terror a lot. I don't know why. I just don't like it. It's just a feeling I have. I just don't prefer it. But
I don't like spreading your seed.
But you're still his spores now.
I don't like the nighttime mechanic. Like I like it, but I'm sick of it.
Yeah. Well, we've been seeing that thing since the beginning. I mean, that map's old as hell. But also, you know, Blizzard took a big risk with this. People see it as the opposite. They see, oh, all these different maps means you don't want to focus on one big strategic, you know, football field, basically, the way these other games have. But I see them, when they added that, they knew what they were getting into, and it just added this giant new layer of complexity that affected all aspects of the game, including player balance and character balance and matchmaking and what comps are okay on one and not another. Like, they made their job harder, if anything, by giving this variety. But I really want the variety. So if the trade-off is that I never get to block one out, I'm okay with that.
Let me ask you something, Scott, because you said something in a match we played recently that I think brings up a really interesting point. You absolutely hated shrines.
Yeah.
And not too long ago, I think it was just a couple games ago, you said, I might be turning around on shrines because you really like the frantic, really rough team fights that it encourages.
Yeah.
So I agree, and I am,
if I'm coming around at all, it's for that reason. I still think that map is need some serious tweaking and balancing to stop the sort of snowball effect. And maybe that's at the peril of what I do like about it. I don't know. They would be better at telling me that, but whatever that is to make that less crazy and less, oh no, we're already dead and it's only the second Punisher kind of thing, that would be great. But when I'm playing that and we're in that fray, that is really fun. And you start to have to think about, all right, where are we hiding? How long are we waiting? Do we click the shrine yet? I don't know. They're just outside of us now. So we need to watch out bottom left corner. Okay, they're flanking around the thing. Like, you start to realize what, I mean, there's a real strategy game happening there that isn't happening in some of the other maps. Not near as much. So I'm coming around on it. I still think it's way too snowball, though. Like, way too much. Even though we won a couple of those games, I'm just like, we shouldn't be able to roll over those guys so fast. Even when we were winning, it was like, it just feels weighted against very small mistakes.
Yeah, there's no choices in there either. Like, in Cursed Hollow, you can say, well, we're not going to do the first, or we're not going to do this tribute, we're going to do this other objective instead.
Yeah.
You know, you can make sort of decisions that aren't like, this is the thing to do, and if you didn't do it, then you've got to suck it for a little while. You know, like, it's... So I think that's the problem. But to what this listener, or yeah, what this writer inner of email, or the emailer said, that's the reason why we did, like, well, I'm speaking for all of us, but for me, for sure, that I dislike status quo, the MOBA, which is like Dota and League, which is like, it's one map and we keep refining it, which is great. At the same time, it's boring. And I'd like to play this game for years to come. And I think I need new things. I need experimentation. I think experimentation is really important. And I think that's always comes at the cost of, we need balance and we need to understand what everyone's doing. But experimentation is what makes games exciting, doing new things, trying new things and all that. We need both. That's what I really respect about what Heroes is doing. And that's why I'm always like, give us map editor for it, please, please, please.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the way to keep a game alive. And a lot of games have done that. You know, Team Fortress has the hats. And I know a few other games like PlanetSide has had like incentive programs to make helmets. Warframe's doing it. Like, a lot of the games that we're really interested in have this way of getting the community involved in part of its creation. I think I really respect games that do it. And mm-hmm. I like to see that in the MOBA space.
Yeah, it'd be good. Yeah. I like variety. I don't want them to not have variety.
Yeah.
I'm into that. And I'm sorry he doesn't like both those Diablo maps. I don't like Shrines as much as I like Immortals. And Immortals has that choice making, you know? Like the thing you were talking about, we can defend first, or we can attack first, or we can split push and let the Immortal peter out because he's not all that tough the first time, or didn't have much of a shield. Like, you've got all these real-time decisions you can make, and Shrines is just go, 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 go!
I'm looking forward to a new tile set, I will say that, because they're very similar looking.
Yeah, this weekend you forgot we were on it, didn't you? You were like, oh, shit, we're on Shrines. And for a while there, we all thought we were on the...
I didn't look at the mini-map. Yeah.
It's like, oh, shoot.
Immortals. It's Battlefield. Oops. Well, yeah. Anyways.
I wanted to hear a guy go, Heroes! We're going to freaking do the thing or what? Anyway, that's a bad impression of the Immortal.
The thing or what?
You guys, thanks for your emails and your calls. They're always great. core@heroesforyou.com, 801-471-0462. A reminder that John and I will be at BlizzCon. It's bound to be a little bit crazy. It's funny you were talking about scheduling time at the Guild Hall for recording. Everyone's all over me to do that for my various things, and I am refusing to because I know how it gets once I get on the ground there and all bets are off.
Yep.
So I'm going to play it by ear and try to figure out when things are going to be happening. But I can promise you this, there will be a point where John and I sit down, and if possible, we'll Skype... Bo in. The logistics are unknown until we're there. But I would love to talk kind of post announcements and things, even if it's off some corner somewhere where we're just sort of together and nobody else is there or whatever. But I want to, you know, we want to do a little summation of what's going on, and we'll put that up on the feed as a bonus episode. So I guess it won't be a bonus because we'll be gone that weekend. So that'll be your episode is what it'll be when I get back on Sunday. But anyway,
we'll find time and a place.
We'll figure it out.
Make it happen.
Yeah. So that'll be good. And if you see us there, please come up, say hi, say howdy. We'll be all over the joint. So just look for us. We'll be around. Are you going? You're doing the, what are you doing Thursday night? Are you going to the thing, the, what you call it? The Rose thing?
Yes, I'm going to be, I think our show is actually just before the Instance one that night.
Oh, that's right. I'm supposed to be recording something there, aren't I?
So we'll be there.
Yeah, I forgot all about that.
You just announced how you weren't doing the show.
Yeah, I think I know that's right. Well, our show is still something we do after all the, like Saturday sometime, because, you know, nothing's happened yet on Thursday. But this pre thing is something different. I kind of forgot. But I'm supposed to do that. I'm supposed to hang out there a bit. I'm supposed to go to the Wowhead party. I've been invited to a Newegg party. And there was one other thing that night. Oh, no, I can't remember the other thing.
Oh,
there may be a influencers meet and greet little like foodie thing like they did last year, which would be like the community people at Blizzard and then us. And so I still don't know about any of that. So that's why I'm hesitant to say anything until we get there. But
there's so much stuff. Yeah. We'll be around.
We'll be around. Look for us.
Scott will be the tall one. I'll be the short one.
All right, fine. There'll be no confusion there. You'll know exactly who we are. All right, I guess that's it. Heroes4You.com is our website. You can go there right now at Heroes4You.com and subscribe to everything. We got Stitcher now, so if you like Stitcher, that's all there right now. Make sure to join /frogpants. You just go into the game and type /frogpants. It's /join/frogpants. That'll put you right into our gaming group, and you can play with like-minded other individuals in the game. Core@heroes4you.com is our email address. 801-471-0462, again, is our voicemail number. You can find John at John_Jagger, Bo Schwartz on Twitter as Bo Schwartz, all one word, Scott Johnson for me, and Core Heroes for the show. It's going to do it for us, for me, and my co-host. We'll see you next week. Is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
We need more snot.
I'm flying on a void ray, dancing in the moon.
With me, let's float down to Peru.
To Peru.
I'm one with the collar, with my ponytail.
My life arrived.